Sporty World Cup greetings to all our Voice of America viewers and listeners. Welcome to episode 5 of On Goal with Sonny and Muckbill. I'm Sonny Young. I'm joined here in Studio 2 by Muckbill Yabarrow. Sporty World Cup greetings, Muckbill.
Sporty World Cup greetings to you too, Sonny. What's going on, man?
Gotta start with your jersey, Muckbill. I see Paris Saint-Germain right on your chest.
Oui, oui, oui.
PSG, they're going to be front and center on Sunday in Qatar.
If I was a betting man, I'd say that somebody from PSG's going to win. Definitely, I think it's going to be huge for PSG, having both their top guys going at it head-to-head, both top scorers in the World Cup as well. For a club to have that type of honor in the World Cup is huge. And PSG was already a big club, but they are on Front Street right now.
Well, we're going to talk about Messi and Mbappe and Sunday's World Cup final, but first, let's look at the third place match, Muckbill, between Croatia and Morocco. Both teams, I think, want to leave Qatar with that third place medal around their necks. Your thoughts on the third place match?
Yeah, Sonny, they definitely say it is the most important game that players don't want to play, right? Right. So it's like it's super important. You don't want to get all the way there and get fourth place. You still want to go out on the podium, right? Bronze is not too bad. You'll take it. But I definitely feel like this is almost like a grudge match. This was the very first game that both teams had played in their group stages.
That's right.
Ending that game in 0-0 because within the group stages, you can finish off in a draw. There's no draw now. So we'll see which one of these two teams wants it more. Morocco having never been to this stage before historically. And Croatia just off of the last World Cup being runners-up. So they definitely wanted to win it all in order to redeem themselves from the last World Cup. But hey, third is still better than fourth, so we'll definitely see. I think they're both going to really come out gunning.
I agree. I think they're going to play with a lot of pride and passion. Let's give the props to the Atlas Lions of Morocco, the Cinderella story at this first World Cup in the Middle East. The Atlas Lions lost to France in the semifinals by a score of 2-0. I felt like that scoreline, Muckbill, was a bit deceptive that, you know, I thought Morocco played very well in that semifinal.
Yeah, I think so as well. You know, unfortunately, Morocco has been plagued throughout the tournament with constant repeat injuries on their back line, especially with their captain, Roman Cias, and numerous other players on the back end, Mazraoui. You can name so many of them. And unfortunately, because of that setup, what we once knew as that back line of defense for the Moroccans that really only had Hakimi staying strong now had so many different gaps, and the French were able to exploit it as early as, what, 5 minutes?
Fifth minute
was Hernandez. And another thing also is when you don't have your go-to players in position and then you're going up against Kylian Mbappe, right, who, if you even remember, both goals that France scored were created by him. It won't show up on the stat sheet because it wasn't really an assist, but you had four, maybe five Moroccans defending him. He shoots the ball. Either a ricochet comes off and Hernandez and Kolo both were just on the receiving end of both those to score those goals. So it's tough. It looked a lot. The scoreline doesn't really show the game, I think.
And I think psychologically, that early goal by Hernandez, it put the Moroccans on their heels. And even after the match, the head coach of Morocco, Regragui, he said that was his biggest regret, giving up a goal that early in the match. And I was thinking that was really the first goal that team gave up to an opposing player in the tournament, yeah, because the earlier one was an own goal.
Right. No, but it's really sad, though, because when you really looked at how that Moroccan team has been playing throughout the entirety of the tournament, right, they've been playing exceptionally well from the goalkeeper position, defender position. You know, they've been really locked down. Their back line has been excellent. And for that fifth minute goal to have happened, any other team, though, Sonny, I think, honestly, would have been deflated. They, in turn, actually turned on the Jets. And if I wasn't mistaken, the first half, they really had more ball possession than France. And you didn't know who was the reigning champs. Because possession was with them. They were creating a lot more shots. But the French almost turned their game on them, right? They did what Morocco was able to do to Portugal, right? Get that goal. Let's get in defense. Everybody was back on defense, whether it's Mbappe was playing defense. You know, you have Griezmann playing defense, you know, Giroud, guys that you're not expecting to be back there were really all in there and making sure that the Moroccans did. And they had a lot of great opportunities, just couldn't get it.
First team from Africa to reach the Final Four. And now, Mukbil, I got to believe the Atlas Lions have really given Africa hope of maybe lifting that trophy very soon.
I think so. Another point that I would even make is I think they've given specific players maybe the confidence to go back home and want to play for, you know, an African side maybe. You know, we have the French side now who have a large portion of their team are descendants of Africans, right? They might have been first generation or parents immigrated there to France. And who's to say if these players don't kind of say, hey, we might want to go back and play for, you know, our parents' country or our country or where our lineage was from. I definitely think that these type of moments are what kind of inspires this for the African players. So it's going to be interesting to see.
And African players, African coaches, I know we've talked about this, Mukbil, but all five African teams led by African coaches, local coaches. This Reg Regi for Morocco, yeah, he's been in charge, I think, only like 4 months.
Yeah.
I mean, what a transformation with that team.
Right. I even think this Moroccan side was a team that had lost to the U.S. side not even too long ago.
That was their last loss, right? I believe.
Yeah, was it in June? It was earlier on in the year. But if you would have told me that that team would have made it to the semifinals, I don't think so. And I also believe that Ziyech had a quarrel or an issue with the former coach. And I guess they stayed with Ziyech. You know, he's a huge, huge playmaker for them. He's been huge the entire tournament, and I feel like it paid off for them.
We talked about Hakimi a little bit. I like the both before and after the match. He was hugging his PSG teammate.
Yeah, I think Hakimi and Mbappe are really good friends off the field, and you know they play for the same side, PSG. They go against each other every day because of the positions that they play, right? So if anybody had an opportunity to try to slow down Mbappe, it would have been Hakimi. And in certain instances, he tried to do what he could to contain him. But the problem with a player of Mbappe's magnitude is when you throw everybody at him, he now creates open opportunities for everyone else. Hence why, you know, Hernandez and Kolo were both able to score these two almost one-on-one situations where they were by themselves. It was just them and the goalie. So, you know, that's another thing about when you have a class player like that. So Mbappe definitely makes the game very, very easy for everybody else around him because he requires so much attention.
As we look at this Moroccan team, Mukbil, I think we have to give props also to their fans.
Yeah.
Perhaps the loudest fans at the World Cup. They traveled from Morocco to Doha to see their team play, and just a great, great crowd.
Yeah, talk about a 12th man, right? People were saying they couldn't even hear themselves. I have some friends of mine that went to some of the games, and they were saying it was so loud to the point where the person next to you wouldn't be able to hear them if you were just talking. You know, you can imagine what that does for a team, and even after going down 1-0 in the first 5 minutes, they were still chanting. You know, I think that's really where the players got their energy from. It was like, look, we're here to see you guys. There's 85 minutes left. Let's go. Let's do something. And they really played well. There's a bicycle kick. I remember.
That was spectacular.
That could have been.
Just missed.
Could have been.
Hit the post.
But, you know, kudos to the French goalkeeper. Got his hands on it just enough to get it on the crossbar. But, man. They had a lot of shots, man. A lot of opportunities.
I know. Our producer Mike likes to talk about woulda, coulda, shoulda. Well, That could have been the best goal of the tournament, but
it could have. It wasn't though. It was quite a save though. It was quite a save. You got to give it to him. So, yeah, man. Honestly, let's run by Sonny. If we'd have to say some of the top upsets in the tournament, what would your choice be?
Well, you know, Argentina is in the final on Sunday against France. I got to go with Saudi Arabia beating Argentina in the opening match. I know there were some offside calls against Argentina, but still, we're talking about spectacular goals. There was a great goal in that game. It was almost a bicycle kick by the Saudi player, but it was yeah. It was a great way to start the tournament, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like that's a great choice. If you really think about it, the Saudi team, I think, had maybe 3 shots on goal.
Unreal.
You know, so it's like, talk about efficiency, right? You got to make sure, and both goals were class, I think, because the Argentinian backline is nothing to play with as well. They were on it. Both goals, you had to really, like, pin the knee. You just looked at it. You had to get the exact angle at the exact moment, kick it with such little spacing. You have no room for error. They made it count. 2 goals. It was back-to-back. And we got to think about it. Messi had a PK. I believe it was around the 10th minute. So it's like you're down 1-0 to Argentina in your opening game. Talk about overcoming adversity, right? You come out and just
second half.
You know, you could have been deflated. Argentina was already in a defensive mode because they already had the goal. So what do? How do you respond? I don't think anybody expected that from Saudi Arabia. So that was stellar.
Another I guess it's an upset, the early exit of Germany in the tournament. I didn't see them going out in the group stage.
In that group stage, I don't think anybody had Japan not only beating Germany, but coming out on top in that group, right? Because you're thinking to yourself, you have a group with Germany and Spain. I know they didn't have any groups of death, but if I was to choose one, that looked like a scary group. You know, Morocco's group was pretty bad too. Croatia, Belgium, and Morocco and Canada. So I think that was also a pretty tough group as well.
Well, let's talk about that other semifinal muck, Bill. Argentina beating Croatia 3-0. We'll look back a little bit. I think you told me right before the podcast that they kind of flipped the score line last time these teams played at the World Cup in the group phase in 2018. Croatia beat Argentina 3-0. I certainly expected a closer match than what we saw, and Messi was just spectacular.
Yeah, I think we spoke about it too before the game. We both thought it was going to be a closer game just because we'd seen what the Croatian side has done from a defensive stand. This has been a World Cup of defenses. You know what I mean? Like, the back lines have been super impressive with the teams that have made it really far, with the exception to the French, because the French have allowed a goal in every single game except for against that Morocco game, oddly. But they just outscore you, right? But, yeah, Croatia-Argentina, I thought it was going to be a closer game. But as we've seen, Messi really stepping up to it. Another interesting fact has been Argentina's tied, I believe, for the most penalties awarded in this World Cup as well.
Okay.
They've had 4. I believe Messi scored 3 and missed 1. Yeah, that just goes to show you. Of his 5 goals, you know, he's had 3 PKs. They are very difficult to score in moments of high pressure. So I'm not going to say these are gimmies, you know, as we've seen with Harry Kane, you know, man, talk about that. That game was, yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad miss.
He's going to remember that for 4 years, I tell you that, man.
Muckbill Yabaro, I'm Sonny Young. You're on goal with Sonny and Muckbill. We'll be right back after this break.
It is the biggest sports event of the year, the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Join VOA to celebrate Africa's king sport. In-depth coverage, breakout stars, Cinderella teams, coaches, players, and let's not forget the fans from the 4 corners of the continent and from the city of Doha. Don't miss the fun with Team VOA Africa. Let's experience the magic of football together.
The magic of football. I'm Sonny Young, joined by Muckbill Yabaro here in Studio 2 at our Voice of America headquarters in Washington. You're on goal with Sonny and Muckbill. Muckbill, as we look forward to Saturday's third place match, who, in your opinion, have been the key players for the Atlas Lions of Morocco at this World Cup?
Ooh, so you definitely have to go with goalkeeper Yassine Benou, only having allowed opposition goals to the French of all the entire games. There's an own goal that was scored by one of his defenders as well early on. So he's played spectacular. You have Amrabat, who President Emmanuel Macron, after the French game, went into the locker room with the Moroccans and told everybody that Amrabat has been the best midfielder in the entire tournament. That's huge praise, you know. Granted, he's not a FIFA official or he doesn't own a team, I don't believe. But nonetheless, you know, hearing that from a president is huge. But I think a lot of people would also say he really was under the radar as a midfielder and statistically has been one of the most solid midfielders the entire tournament. You have another midfielder on the Moroccan side, Unahi, who's also their number eight, who's been amazing as well. He definitely... a lot of big teams are looking at him. He might be making his move to the EPL. So we will see.
And I want to give a shout-out for En-Nesyri. En-Nesyri scored on the header for Morocco. And
Ziyech as well.
Ziyech. And Regragui, their coach, was saying a lot of the Moroccan journalists didn't want En-Nesyri on the World Cup team. They felt that he wasn't skillful enough. But yeah, that was a beautiful header.
That header had they swung the camera to Cristiano Ronaldo, and he just almost smirked at his face. He knew it was a quality goal. It looked very similar to a lot of headers that Ronaldo scored in his career because he got so much elevation on it. But definitely, the thing about the Moroccans is they have such an amazing team in totality, but you could say the one point that they are, I wouldn't say lacking, but could use more assistance in is that very front, right? And En-Nesyri has played well, but there's been moments where if you had maybe a Mohamed Salah, right?
Right.
In a position like that, you would really make use of a lot of other opportunities. And then on top of it, once you take him out, who are his replacements? You had Walid Chedira, who comes in and kind of, you know, doesn't really do that great when En-Nesyri gets out of the game. A lot of missed opportunities, maybe two against the Portuguese. Then I think he also got two yellows. Second yellow was questionable, but he had got a red card. And then that game was just all up in the air at the very last couple of minutes on extra time. But yeah, all in all, I think this team was a very well-designed team. And they've shown Africa that, you know, it can be done on the World Cup stage.
And one shout out for Luka Modric. He'll play in the third place match, 37 years old for Croatia. Possibly his last international match for the Croatian team. Ballon d'Or winner in 2018. Just a great player. I know he was disappointed after that loss to Argentina, but we'll see what he does after Qatar.
Yeah, no, I think for sure it's definitely is his last World Cup. I don't think he plays another four at this level. You can even see certain games that went into extra time. Really, once you get to that certain age, it's like you can even see it with Messi, really, in certain games where they go beyond extra time. And it's just like you can't really play that long, you know, at that elite of a level when you're playing against 19, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds. But I think, you know, Luka he's done some amazing things with his career. One of the oldest Ballon d'Or winners as well, him and Benzema, I believe, being first-time Ballon d'Or winners in their 30s. It's huge. So I know he definitely wants to go out with the win. So it's going to definitely be a battle between Croatia and Morocco. It'll be an exciting game for sure.
Muckbill, you mentioned Benzema, and he was one of three French players injured prior to the World Cup, along with Pogba and N'Golo Kanté. I understand Benzema kind of made a late plea to get into Sunday's final.
I think a question was posed to Coach Didier Deschamps, and it was almost to the extent of, hey, Benzema's ready to go. What do you do with him? or do you let him play? And he just said, next question. So I think there was push also from President Macron to want to have Benzema, Pogba, and Kante and some of these injured players to come and be a part of the celebratory action to help support the team. But I could understand from both parties, you know, I know Benzema, this is possibly his last World Cup playing at this level. Having won the Ballon d'Or, I think he would have performed well in this World Cup. But then Coach Deschamps is seeing that his team has, you know, now garnered this level of chemistry that you can't really, you put in a player like Benzema who requires a lot of touches, who can score for you at an elite level, but what do you do? Who do you take out? You know, and that person that you take out, could it be a possibility that maybe he's informed but not informed to play at a final? Because you're just throwing him in. He doesn't have a chance to warm up or anything. Put him in the big stage and let him play. But if he doesn't perform, what happens?
Right,
You blame Benzema. You blame Coach Deschamps. I think it's as unfortunate as it is, I would love to see him in the World Cup stage. But I think Coach made the right decision.
We talked right at the top about those PSG superstars, Mbappe and Messi. How much do you think this final is about those two players? Or do you see maybe some other players picking up the slack on Sunday in the final?
I think, obviously, you have to put Messi and Mbappe up there. Messi is doing it for his country, his legacy, arguably one of the greatest ever. But he hasn't been able to do it on a world stage for his national side. Mbappe, at age 19, was able to get it done for his team.
Amazing.
Last year, wants to go back-to-back and be the best and continue to be the best player in the world. Then you got the other subplots, right? You have Alvarez with 4 goals.
one of the younger players on Argentina.
Younger Argentinian player. Plays for Man City. Plays behind Haaland, who is another stellar stud, you know what I mean, of Norwegian descent. Then you have, on this other side now, Oliver Giroud. He just surpassed Thierry Henry for the most goals scored on the French national side. He could be arguably the most underrated striker of this level because the man has won in so many levels, right? Whether it's La Liga, Serie A, like World Cup, like what does he have to do for him to prove that he's supposed to be here?
In that semifinal against Morocco, every time Giroud would miss the shot or come close to scoring,
man,
see him lift his jersey up and just shake his head.
I remember one play, the ball bounced right over Cius because of his hamstring, wasn't really able to, he misjudged the time. Giroud took that step left-footed and it hit the crossbar. It was a mean strike. That was going into the net, you know, just a couple centimeters. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Well, Muckbill, we mentioned Saudi Arabia beating Argentina in their opening match. Argentina has won every game since then. How much do you see Argentina and Messi as a team of destiny at this World Cup?
I think, you know, for every Messi fan out there, they believe that this is the one. Everything is aligning. And not only is it that Messi's a part of the team, he is an integral part of the team, right? He is their leading goal scorer. He is their leading playmaker. I believe he has 3 assists as well. So it's like he is doing everything that he needs to do to get the job done. And in other teams that he's played alongside, when it was for his national team, unfortunately, they haven't had that cohesiveness or that chemistry or that quality, right? You have a guy like Alvarez who's right there with you. You can create for him and then have him score, or he knows what position he needs to be in. You don't have to almost, you know, baby him to get it done. So I think this has been the best team that he's been on. And I wouldn't say he's on the back. He is on the back end of his career, but what a way to ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, and I think he'll finally, if they win on Sunday, I'm talking about Argentina, I think Messi will, you know, he'll be closer to Maradona in terms of legacy and stature. He just hasn't been able to lift the cup.
Yeah, I think with Maradona and Argentina, there's this level of mystique, right? I think because of how long Maradona's been out of the game and that glory that Argentina's seen with him, it's almost as if it's like you're chasing a ghost, because Messi has done.
I like that.
You know, Messi is
chasing
done,
a ghost.
Messi has done everything you could possibly do to play at an elite level everywhere but for his national side. So I think if he gets this, because you got to look on the club side, Maradona hasn't played on the elite levels that Messi has and done certain things, the same quality of things that he's done, winning so many Ballon d'Ors and all these other things. So I think if he's able to get this, the conversation will be a lot closer. It's very similar to that Michael Jordan, LeBron conversation, right? You know, for our basketball viewers.
You mentioned Messi's assists in the tournament, and I think that's the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Should he and Mbappe end up with 5 goals each?
Yeah.
I think it goes to how many assists you have.
It's possible. I think Mbappe has 2 assists at the moment, so maybe if he gets that second assist, then what happens? I mean, that third assist, what happens there? It's going to be interesting nonetheless. Also, we also posed the question of Giroud possibly scoring a goal or two, right?
That's right.
Because if you've scored 5 goals, but your goal was for the World Cup to win it, you could take it. I would take precedence to that goal, I think, maybe, you know. I don't know. Alvarez could score too, so.
Well, we just have a few minutes left, Muck Bill. What about African teams that didn't quite do as well as the Atlas Lions? Senegal, they made it to the round of 16 without Sadio Mane, and I give them full credit for how they performed.
I think if you have Sadio Mane playing in that role as lone striker, or possibly even just controlling mid, that's a completely different team, right? Because now the defense are required to be worrying about this world-class, you know, striker or midfielder, whatever position he decides to play, if he wants to create or if he wants to score. You remove that player, now you're able to guard maybe one-on-one on these other players who, you know, could be of quality, but it's just that they don't have... Sometimes when you have a bigger name player, it's not even so much about them performing. It's just about the fear of knowing what they could do. That, like, look at Morocco, France. Mbappe was being guarded maybe by 2 players at any given time. They were just watching, trying to, like, corral him, make sure that he doesn't get that space that he needs. Even Amrabat, who's been playing amazing for Morocco, one time it was him one-on-one. The pace is unreal. He couldn't catch up to him, and by the time that he caught up to him, he was able to do a slide tackle that really was one of the most amazing slide tackles that I've seen all tournament, where he got ball and still took him out. It was amazing, but it took him a while to catch up to him, you know, so... Yeah, definitely. I think if Mane was there, that would be a completely different Senegal side. I don't know if he – does he play the next World Cup?
Yeah, his age I think he'll be 34 at the next World Cup.
Yeah.
One non-Moroccan player from an African team that really stood out in your eyes, Muck Bill.
Mohamed Kudus.
Yeah, I have to go with him also.
For sure. That kid, man, he was – the shining light for the Black Stars, you know. They weren't that highly favored, you know, coming into the tournament. But whenever he touched the ball, he was able to create opportunities. You know, he just showed his level of class playing for the Black Stars. And I think that that's just the beginning. You know, he plays for Ajax right now, which is a big Dutch club. But I think a lot of the bigger clubs are going to be very interested in him moving forward.
Muck Bill Yabarrow, and I'm Sonny Young. On Goal with Sonny and Muck Bill, we have reached the end of episode 5. There will be an episode 6 post-World Cup, so please join us. Thanks to our producer, Mike Hove, as well as our studio technician, Mr. Chung. I'm VOA Sonny Young. Thanks, Muck Bill.
Thanks, Sonny.
And we'll see you for episode 6.